Final Play Podcast would like to welcome you to the following presentation of the National Rugby League.
This movie was so good.
Oh, it was violent, as you'd expect, but it was pretty good.
I actually thought it was going to be a lot more gore. Was I expecting too much gore?
Maybe.
I think I was expecting too much gore. So maybe that's on me.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Final Play Podcast. NRL week, as always, round eight of, pretty stacked sort of games. We'll get right into them. The first game was Thursday. Look, the Raiders going down to Rabbitohs. Raiders have huge, huge problems, but 34-20.
Look, the game didn't kick off very well either with George Williams going down in the warm-up. So
yeah.
I guess that was a bit of a telltale sign of things to come. For this game on the Thursday night, a bit of a marquee matchup. I think they were touting a fairly big crowd there in Canberra, but they only ended up being like 14,000 there. So right. I thought that from what they'd advertised that there was going to be a bit of a bumper crowd there.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, two pretty informed teams. Well, sorry, not the other way around. Going off last year, two pretty informed teams. I mean. Look, it's the old adage of like, I mean, I'm sorry to pick you on North Queens Cowboys, but it's the old adage, if your team loses, people just don't want to see. When your teams win, people want to see. That's just the way that is.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
that's right. So,
you don't want to say to me, you don't really want to say fair weather fans, but it's just a product of what it is. Like if your team, and this is the fourth loss on the trot now for Canberra, so yeah,
Everybody of every league of, and that would be AFL, NFL, everything, everywhere that your team's losing. Well, I mean, except for probably Premier League soccer, you'll always get bumper crowds for that. But generally, if your team's losing, these crowds just don't show up for some reason. Which I get, it's fair with the fans, ridiculous, but people only like when you're winning.
People like winners,
and unfortunately, yeah, Raiders. Look, they looked pretty good in the first half, at least, anyway. I mean, they were up in the first half, 16-14.
Yeah, I thought they looked stellar in the first half. Like, them not having Williams there didn't really affect them too much. They sort of come out with plenty of enthusiasm to kick the game off. And I think what sort of dragged them down a little bit was the penalty count, I think, in that first half. I think that really sort of started to swing the momentum around. Back to South. It will discipline it, and that'd be something that Ricky Stewart would be very unimpressed with. That sort of discipline. When you're shorthanded like they are, it is what it is. Like you've got to complete your sets, which they didn't do, and you can't give away penalty. You just cannot give the Rabbitohs prime position, you know, to camp inside your 20.
But it was the same thing against the Cowboys. There was no go forward from their forwards.
No, again.
Again. All from 1 to 5, every player number 1 to 5 got over 100 metres. The rest of them was just pitiful, except for Emre Gula. The rest of them were just absolutely pitiful. Like, it was like Ryan James, granted, I suppose he only played 20 minutes, but if you look across, there just wasn't go forward.
No.
So and I mean, you always say this, but if your forward pack gets you ahead, then that sort of gets your backs ahead and gets the games in. But they did it. I mean, they did a lot of runs too. You could just tell they were playing for Canberra, at least in the second half. They're playing on the back foot a lot, like the 1 to 5 had to do so many runs because they were running out of their 20-meter line all the time.
Yeah, that's right.
When you're in poor field
position, that's just a byproduct of it. And if you don't have any decent sort of go forward by, you know, your forward pack, then you have to rely on your wingers and centers to try and get you out of trouble, and that you can do it to give your forwards a rest every now and then, but to continue to rely on it is no good, and Canberra sort of had a couple of tries denied too by the video ref, which sort of didn't really help, and I think Benji did a stellar job in selling one of them. He just sort of looked like he was hiding behind one of the Raiders attackers there. And then just poked his head around the corner and went, oh no, there he is. He's gone through that hole. I'll just put my hands in the air. And that was very, very smart. I think the other one that was sort of denied towards the end of the game too, I think Harawira Naira sort of slipped over as he was sort of going to be a decoy runner, slipped over, and it just halted Gagai coming forward a little bit, and Whiten end up going around behind that, and it's just like that's a pretty clear cut sort of obstruction and just sort of halting Gagai in the line of defense. So you can't really complain at both of those, but I think Ricky's definitely got his hands full at the moment with what's happening down in the nation's capital.
Well, Wayne, on the other hand, has Latrell Mitchell out for, I guess it's still two more games. But Cody Walker and from the 1 and 6, Cody Walker and Benji, Benji's just, basically giving a FU sort of to, at least to me, to the Tigers, like every player that's left the Tigers.
He sure is.
Cody Walker's playing admirable at number one.
He's slotted in fairly seamlessly. The thing with the Rabbitohs now is they're going to be dealing with the Adam Reynolds injury. So, he's avoided surgery, but he could be gone for at least 4 weeks with a thumb injury. So that's, that'll sort of test them out in the coming weeks with no Latrell, and no Adam Reynolds, for the next couple of weeks still as well. So that'll really test them out.
Well, they've got, they did shift it. So Cody Walker's in the 6. Benji's in the 7. Alex Johnson's back to fullback, so that's for their.
Well, they've got no choice too. They lost also Campbell Graham, and Cameron Murray in this game as well. So, they're running low on troops, at the moment. So like heaps of injuries this week.
Definitely. Wow. I mean they're only playing the team. I'll just before I talk about the next game. Do I just put my money now on Alex Johnson to win top try scorer? Because I may as well. Because Jesus Christ, that guy knows how to find the line.
Well,
2 times in that game.
If you had done it earlier in the year and just disregarded what Brett Morris was doing, but you would have got a decent price. But I would think that those odds will begin to plummet as the year goes on.
No, I'd put it on now. I mean, they're running into sort of injury trouble. They're only playing against, the team that won the next game, who are just, my God, a red hot Melbourne beating the Sharks 40-14. And
Thursday night too, isn't it?
Yeah, big game. But I mean Melbourne's side 1-17 is unchanged. It's just, they fortunately don't really have don't have any injuries sort of at all. They've got... Nelson Asifa Solomona finally got that right, and George Jennings back in from head knocks, and Harry Grant's back in the number 9, and Brandon Smith's back to the 13. So,
well, they're just waiting now on Pappenhausen to come back, which looks like will be magic round in week 10. So
Nico Hines is
more than capable replacement.
Yeah. Oh, he has been so far. The reason they won this game so well was purely and solely just their completion rates. They completed their sets extremely well. Would they end up getting 85%? Yeah. So, there's not much to sort of try to rip through these games, but I felt that for this game, when I watched it, it's just a typical Melbourne game. It was a bit more flashy than your Cameron Smith, he dragged it down. But it was just a typical Melbourne game for me, at least.
Look, I would have thought that that Craig Bellamy probably wouldn't have been very happy with their first half.
Of course not.
But, you know, the Canberra at Cronulla were right in this, and they were totally up. They were playing. I thought they were playing the more enterprising football in the first half. It was very out of character for Melbourne. Even though I think they were near perfect in that second half.
Yeah.
But it just goes to show, like, you know, the teams like Cronulla and they can push your top teams, and okay, granted, you know, 8-6 down at halftime, Melbourne, and whether or not they got a bit of a spray at halftime, but boy, didn't they show off and flex the muscles in the second half? They just ran right.
Oh well, yeah, they did. I mean, yeah, it would end up being, it was 8-6, and then they end up winning that second half 32-6. So. It was 34-6. So yeah, they ran right. Remy Smith was just all over the park getting tries. I think it was a bit more of an even
share of possession as well too. Like, you know, once Melbourne actually started to, you know, to keep the ball and put a little bit more pressure on Cronulla, they tore them apart up the middle. They tore them apart down the edges. It was just complete. Yeah, they've got danger. You know, alarm bells would have been ringing everywhere for Cronulla in that second half, and they just could not contain how much attacking power that Melbourne showed, and it's like I said, there's nothing really left to say. It was just a complete and utter riot in the second half.
The one thing is to say is someone like we've lost Cameron Smith and Cooper Cronk. Can one of those two go down to Melbourne and show Cameron Munster how to kick a goal? Because, my God, he can't kick. Three out of eight. It would have been a worse score if he could actually kick.
Absolutely. He was spraying him. It wasn't even close on something. He was spraying him all over the place.
Someone needs to go down there and show him how to kick, or someone else needs to take on that.
The funny thing that I sort of noticed too, especially in that first half, after the Addo Carr try, I don't know if you've seen the touchies. And I don't know why I even picked up on this or even seen this, but one touchy had his flag up and the other one had it down, and it was a clear miss. And one touchy actually had his flag up, and it's like, all right. So I just sort of did a little bit of poking around and why it wasn't, you know, who actually makes the final decision, and it's the referees, and the referee called no goal. So it's I guess it's sort of two against one once it comes to that. So the referee's still got to keep his wits about him a little bit. He can't sort of take, you know, any sort of time off, you know, in regards to that sort of situation. Do you know what I mean? Like, he still has to be the final adjudicator if the touchies, I guess, disagree on whether a convert or a goal has gone over.
It's pretty rare. Yeah, but exactly. It does happen. Next game was a pretty entertaining game. The Broncos beating the Titans 36-28. Just from the full 80 minutes, it was a very entertaining game, which doesn't really, to be honestly, bode well for the Gold Coast Titans, to be completely honest, as not powerhouse, but as contenders this year. Like, they lost the game, but they, you know, to be contending, these are the games they should have won at least in the second half, and they just got rolled over in the second half.
You would have been forgiven to think that the Gold Coast, if you had have looked at the score after 15 minutes, and the Gold Coast were going to put 60 on them.
100%.
There was just such an unbelievable start, an unbelievable turnaround by the Broncos. Jermaine Asako just got caught out so many. He got caught out twice at fullback. And granted, the Gold Coast kicking on the third tackle to catch him out of position, and that's what you've got to do when teams want to play that extra man in defence, especially defending their 10-meter line, and they put the fullback up in the line of defence. That's what smart teams have got to do, and the Gold Coast did it twice, and it worked perfectly.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it did. It
was found wanting, and the commentators on Fox Sports are calling for the hook. but he was the one that basically sparked that second half of the first half. He was one of the main instigators in that comeback for it to be 22-all at halftime.
Calling for the hook, I love it.
Calling for the hook, like it was unbelievable. You can't write this stuff.
No, you can't write certain stuff. Although he did, I mean, yeah, he did end up having a better second half, Jermaine Osaka. I mean, granted, like, if you're a fantasy team, you know, the only reason he gets so well because he's a goal kicker, but he ended up
How badly did he cook Brian Kelly on that one step?
Yeah.
He just cooked him.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it was like one of those floating sort of steps too. It looked a little bit better.
And Brian Kelly, he just stood still and just went, oh no, there he goes, like straight past me. But I have a little bit of allegiance there to the Gold Coast, but on that, just trying to think which try it was now, like Philip Sammy. Oh my God! Like he really needs to smarten up and make a lot better decisions. Like holding his line, he shoots up out of the line so often, leaves his center in the lurch, which is Brian Kelly, leaves them in the lurch, and then the Broncos have got an open try line out on the left hand edge, and it's like, what are you doing? Like you just can't. I think it was the second try, might have been the Osaka try, as they make a break, I'm pretty sure it was Xavier Coates puts a horrible kick back in on the inside. It wasn't where it was meant to go. It basically went on a right angle, and Tyson Gamble picks it up. He's half a meter offside, and nobody picks up on it as he gets down further down the field and is tackled by AJ Brimson. He gets up, flops to the ground, with nobody around him, tries to play the ball too quickly, falls over, a brilliant acting job, mind you, just unbelievable acting job, falls over, and AJ Brimson gets sent for 10 minutes. And it's like, oh, hang on a minute, they shouldn't even be getting that far because he was offside from the Xavier Coates kick. And then AJ Brimson gets sent for 10. And then they pour on two more tries. And it's like, what is happening here? Why has nobody seen that? Was it just me? Was it just the one-eyed Gold Coast in me? Oh, yeah, Gold Coast supporter in me. It was half a meter offside, Tyson Gamble. And then that very next play,
yeah,
he flops over.
Yeah.
AJ Brimson is off him. He tries to play the ball too quick. Do you know what I mean? It's just bewildering. And then Brimson gets sent for 10. You're like, what are you doing? Like, what? Why? What for? He fell over.
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, no.
I didn't like it.
It's probably a little bit of both. Probably a little bit of one-eyed. It could have went either way to me. A little bit of one-eyed in you,
but
and a little bit of.
It shouldn't have got that far because Tyson Gamble was half a meter offside on the Xavier Coates kick. So yeah. You blow the penalty right there because he's the one that gets involved and picks up the ball. Boom.
I don't know what they see in Tyson Gamble. Clearly they just went, well, okay, screw you, dude.
An instigator. That's what they see because, oh boy, was he an instigator.
Oh, and you just look at the face of him. Have a look at the face of him. Like if you Google him, he just looks like that cheeky son of a bitch, to be completely honest.
He was a total instigator. Like he was just... brimming with confidence, like it just like you wouldn't believe, and it's just like, man, like I get it. Yeah, the kid's got guts, but yeah, he exuded a lot of confidence for a guy who's played four first grade games in his career.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, no, he's very proud of himself. But look,
he was proud of himself after that game. Don't worry about that.
Oh, of course he would have been. He didn't win that game for him. I'm telling you that much. He definitely didn't win the game for them.
He was piggybacking.
Well, it was a lot of them. It felt like just a team effort. It wasn't really like, you know, Corey Oates got, you know, since he's been back, has just racked up the meters in terms of running meters. Still not in his favorite position of second row, but I think it was just more of a team effort there when there was no real, like, standout. Like, really, you can't even say Jermaine Osaka had a good game because he only really had a good game in the second half. His first half was pitiful, so...
The one thing that I did notice too is that obviously that they shut Fifita down. Yeah, in the first half he had five runs for 45 meters. He didn't finish a whole lot better than that. in that second half. But you could see that Fifita was just sticking to his structures and not really trying to find, you know, anything on the open side or anything of that. Like, and as he hit the line, he was hit with two and three and four defenders at the same time. And it just, it completely nullified him. And he's been a major strike weapon for them over the last few weeks. Okay, fair enough. That, you know, they leaked 40 points last week against Souths, but at least they put, at least they were, there was a much better performance, like all round performance by the Gold Coast last week than what it was this week. It's like you said, you know, this week was all 15 minutes, and then the rest of the Broncos, they just, I don't know, they got their tails in the air and they were unbelievable.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, that's exactly, I know, yeah. They were, and it was the week leading up to that game for me, it felt like, and I sort of just picked it, like it's just the week leading up, but it felt like this is a classic, Brisbane's going to win for this game because of all the talk about, you know, the classic Big Brother thing and like in Queensland and all that. It just had that classic feel where the Titans for me were going in probably a little bit, just a little bit too confident, and as they should, they were in form. I shouldn't say they're in form, but they're in better form.
Well, they have been in form. They've been leaking points the last few weeks, but they've still got plenty of confidence in attack. And to me, to go 55 minutes between tries after you open up the game like a house on fire, was just a horror show.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, yeah, but good win by him. Moving on to the next game. The Panthers beating the Seagulls 28-16.
Close game.
Yeah.
Out there in Bathurst.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, but we had Bathurst. What did you think? I mean, you're never going to get a big crowd, but...
No, but yeah, that's I think, initiative that the NRL should... You know, well, obviously, they do it a fair bit anyway. You know, they take plenty of games. It's whether or not the teams want to take home games, you know, their home games out to the bush, whether or not there's financial incentives from the NRL, or do you know what I mean? Like, you know, they go out to Mudgee and stuff like that. So yeah, but yeah, that's me. And another game we've Penrith have been in stellar form, obviously been in stellar form, but Manly were up for the challenge in this game.
Yeah, they were coming into me with great form. Obviously, we talked them up the last few weeks, just how one man can change that team. He nearly did it this week. Like he did as much as he could. But look,
well, his intercept try was nice. It was just planted there in the line of attack, Penrith's line of attack, almost a little bit of a sneak. And just plucked the ball out of the air and ran, you know, sort of 70 odd meters. Nobody was catching him. He hasn't lost any speed at all.
No, the only one that I thought could, you know, Brian Toto, but no, he couldn't catch him at all. But
not a chance.
But Tom's one step is probably Toto's two steps. So like, you know,
What's Trebojevic? 6'3", 6'2", 6'3"?
He could probably do like that NFL hurdle straight over Toto if he wanted to. he could. I'd love to see it. But I'd love to see it. There's no rule against it. So
no way.
imagine
the audacity of somebody trying to do that.
But it'd have to be someone tall like him. When someone sort of... So your timing has to be impeccable, but...
Something like that. Him, Jason Saab could be another one.
Yeah. Has to be a skinny, lanky guy.
Exactly.
Look, and for Penrith, they just did... I want to say they're starting to turn like Melbourne, but they can be clinical when they need to. Look, they were up in the first half. I mean, granted, there was only 16-6, so Manly were in their game the whole time, but they were just clinical enough just to shut the game out. That's how I took it with that game.
Oh, they just know how to turn the screws on you. And now with Appy Coruscant being back, it's, you know, that's just going to make them, you know, their game is going to be even more controlled now, with him back at dummy half. So they're basically back at full strength now, with their side. So they're just going to get better and better. And look, you know, you can't take anything away. Like, you know, Manly were playing with a whole lot of – even in the second half, like that Manly didn't believe that they were out of this game.
No. They weren't out of this game, really. I mean, wasn't it? Yeah, like they were well into this game. They just had that huge stretch where they couldn't get over the line after Cherry Evans' try in the second half. And they were well in this game. So
even with 6 minutes to go at 22-16 after the Jason Saab try, like they were there or thereabouts, and you know they got a little bit lucky. They almost turned possession over straight after the kickoff. There was a penalty. Tapau looked like he dropped the ball, and then it was deemed to be raked. They didn't end up getting a very good set after they'd scored anyway to just sort of apply any pressure back to Penrith just to try and make them flinch a little bit. And you know, that takes a lot of sustained pressure too, because Penrith at the moment, like you said, they're clinical like Melbourne. When the blowtorch is applied, they just don't flinch.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Do you think, a little bit off topic before we move to the next game, do you think with his age and then the contract he's on that it's smart, I guess, for Manly to look at, well, the rumour is of moving Daly Cherry Evans, like moving him on. Do you think that's a smart idea for both ways? I mean, I personally think it's only smart for Manly because obviously that frees you up some cash.
Yeah, but where are you getting your next halfback? That's the thing. Where are you getting your next champion from?
Well, I just assume that they've got someone coming up. Yeah, no, I agree as well. Like, it'd have to be someone young, and then they need other players. So I don't know if that money is just holding it up, but. I think
it would be a little bit easier for them to try and find through their junior system or, you know, to poach off other clubs, you know, do a bit of recruiting off other clubs, players to complement around him. Like, you know, if they get some depth of prop, because they're lacking that at the moment. You know, obviously they lost Aiden Fanua-Blake this year to the Warriors, so that sort of hampered them a little bit, even though Marty Tapau's a bit of a weapon, but... It's, you know, and obviously Jake Trbojevic is there too, but I think they sort of lack a little bit of a strike edge back role, like a lot of teams do. So, you know, you could, whether there's somebody coming up through the junior ranks, but who's a halfback that's going to blow people out of the water, that's going to be either available or through their junior system. So I think they're tied to the Trbojevic brothers and Cherry Evans. I don't see a way for them to offload that.
And I don't see it wouldn't be smart for him to do it anyway. Like, he won't lose any money, but it wouldn't be smart. Like, if anything, I think the contract runs out next year, if I believe, or the year. It's possibly next year or the year after. But you know, he's not going to get the same contract again. But if he's 32 or 33 next year, maybe I'm assuming being that was like a 7-year contract or whatever that was. He's pretty set on the Manly. I don't think he's going to uproot to go anywhere else.
It all comes back to all the same sort of BS that you hear all the time. Oh, he wants to go back to Brisbane, go back home to Queensland, blah, blah, blah. Like, just you can't listen. As soon as they mention that sort of stuff and they go, oh, he wants to go back home, it's like, no, stop it. Just stop it.
I don't think he does. So...
Yeah, that's he's going to persevere there. Like, you know, he's trying to rekindle, you know, his former relationship and partnership with Kieran Foran. You know, that they've got they've proved that they can push the big guns at the moment when they're on their game. So to give up on that and that's on management as well to be signing him to, you know, an astronomical deal like that. The Cowboys have got to live with it up here as well with Jason Tamalolo. So it's just, not so much the money, but the length of contract.
The length of it.
Not so much the problem, but that's the deal with it. It's the length of contract.
Next game is the Bulldogs the Eels beating the Bulldogs. Ooh. 32-10. Oops.
Parramatta had a nice little training run here on Saturday night. look, yeah, I guess once again, yeah, Parramatta are looking. Look, okay, the Bulldogs aren't playing very well. You know, obviously, besides the win that they had last week, but yeah, just a nice little training run, and you know, Canterbury just not throwing anything at all in attack that Parramatta would be worried about at all. And look, the Parramatta had their lapses, you know, at the start of the second half, and they I think they sort of switched off a little bit, but it didn't take them long to sort of flick the switch back on. To sort of wrestle control of this game back.
Yeah, no, exactly, and they did. I mean, really, that's exactly what they did. They're pretty to me very very high. Well, at least for me and what I think in contendership. I think they've got a good enough mix. I mean, Clint Gutherson is their linchpin to me. I mean, so is Mitchell Moses. Pretty much, I think he's pretty much. Yeah, I think they are definitely contenders.
Look, for this and this game too, like, you know, you can't really fault what Parramatta did. To me, yeah, it was just no frills footy. You know, not a lot of mistakes. Like I said, yeah, they switched off a little bit, and the Bulldogs capitalised, but it was just, yeah, not a lot. Yeah, they didn't really have to sort of get out of second or third gear. In this game, their completion rate was pretty poor. I think, like I said, yeah, once they sort of shut themselves off for a little bit, yeah, they got complacent. They dropped some early ball, and Canterbury pounced on it. But it's, I mean, it didn't take them long to sort of wrestle control of this game back, and, you know, sort of shut them out towards the end of the game. You know, defensively as well, you know, they fell off a lot of tackles as well, which, you know, the Bulldogs have been fairly poor at this year. But, yeah, Parramatta were pretty ordinary defensively, but did enough to sort of keep Canterbury out.
It was just a classic on the Bulldog side, is that they don't have the player credentials there that could have wrestled that deficit back after they were down 16-0. So that's fine. That's just where they are at the moment, unfortunately. So
no, that's right. You know, I was listening to this game on the radio, and it just, yeah, it was just one of those games. Yeah, like we said, you know, just Parramatta just did it in a canter. That didn't look like they exuded a lot of extra energy. So, you know, that could prove good for them later on in the season, that they didn't have to sort of get into a sort of drag them down, beat them up game, in a game that they should have won fairly comfortably anyway.
Again, speaking of the teams that didn't seem to get it, nearly really had to get into second gear that much, was the Roosters beating the Knights 38-4.
They were just way too classy for Newcastle. Yeah. I don't know what the hell is going on. They are such a Jekyll and Hyde team at the moment. They put a few performances like this together a couple of weeks in a row, just disgraceful.
They did the same thing last year. Exactly the same thing last year. They can't beat these top eight sides. Well, they can and they can't. When they can, and then if they do, then you get a bit, you know, Knights are going well, and then it goes back to the same old Knights again.
No, that's right. And this game came down to, I think it came down to a little bit of game planning as well. Clearly, it was a game plan to get Kalen Ponga more involved and him more at first receiver, and it just doesn't work. Branny tried that a couple of years ago, and he got ripped to shreds for it, for trying to put Kalen Ponga in the halves. It's good to have him there, and him to have the kicking game that he's got, and that ability to maybe slot in there every now and then, but for him to be there for 70-75% of first receiver or second receiver, It's not a good game plan. It just doesn't work. I don't know what it is for him to be a primary playmaker like that. It just doesn't work.
Their biggest thing I've noticed, but is that they their forwards, like we say, other teams where their forwards aren't giving them the go ahead. This team does. You're clamming Saifidi and Frizzell, sometimes Mitch Barnett, but those three give them the go forward.
That's
it's just
right.
That it doesn't seem like that Blake Green and Kurt Mann don't know what to do with the go forward. And then maybe, and that's probably why Caelan Ponga slots in there. It's just, they have to go forward. This just doesn't go
anywhere. It's too much of a conservative game plan. And not to say that it's too much, but it's a very conservative game plan purely on the personnel that they've got there. You know, you can't play a majorly expansive game or super creative game because, you know, Blake Green's one of the better game managers that's around. But do you know what I mean? Like, you know, he's that game manager. He puts the ball into corners. He's a good game manager, but he's not a super game breaker. Kurt Mann is the same. Like, you know, he's a makeshift 5'8", and that's why they really have no option but to put Caelan Ponga in there try and spark something, and it just didn't work.
Yeah, that I mean, it's pretty cut and dry. It didn't work. I mean, they just didn't get, you know, where Roosters didn't have to get out of second gear, this team couldn't get out of second gear. It sort of came across.
That's right. They were so slow. You could just see as well, too, like they were so slow on their structured plays, like, you know, with passes at the back and you know, their box plays and decoy runners and things like that to try and deceive the defensive line. They're so slow until it gets to Caelan Ponga, and then he has to try and do too much. He has to try and weave too much magic to try and get a little bit of creativity and a little bit of spark going for Newcastle. But like you said, that their forward pack is not the one that's letting them down at the moment. And it's, I mean, all credit to the Roosters, just way too classy. But boy, they are just mounting an injury toll that's kind of scary. As we start, we're only a third of the way through the season.
Yeah, they had a horror night in this game. They lost Brett Morris to an ACL, and so was Lindsay Collins as well to a season-ending ACL. So, yeah.
They've also lost Sam Farrells as well. He's got a detached retina, so yeah. He's having surgery on that. So they're getting down to the bones of their ass at the moment it's really testing their depth.
And it's interesting, they still haven't, you know, he's number 21. They still haven't named that young stud, that Joseph Suali. So, I mean, they're really, really holding him off. I mean,
I don't think they've got any choice at the moment. He's going to have to come in
sooner or later.
I think they're going to have to blood him. I think they're going to have to blood him soon.
I feel like they're going to have to, the only way they'll blood him is when they start losing. I mean, you know, talk about games. There's there's blockbuster games on Thursday, you know. South Storm Thursday, then you got Panthers Sharks on Friday, but then straight after that it's bloody Eels and Roosters. That'll be a testing game for them. Yeah, the Roosters, absolutely. Eels as That's well, right. But the Eels, this is a game the Eels should win considering the way Roosters are decimated, but who's to say?
No, well, that's right. Yeah, you know, it's the old cliche of, oh well, it's next man up, do you know what I mean? And Trent Robinson's got the structures in place, I guess, that succeed. So, you know, wouldn't they like to have my boy Ryan Hall at the moment now? He might actually be getting some game time.
It's so bitter.
Yeah. It's the Sam Walker show there at the moment. So they've got Jared Weir Hargreaves on the bench. So do you know what I mean? Like he can always come back into the starting side and they're not really going to lose a whole lot of punch in that first 20 to 25 minutes. So, you know, they can sort of stay in games and they'll get carried as far as Sam Walker, and Drew Hutchison, Tedesco. And I guess, and Tedesco will carry them.
He's back this week.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, personally, I've picked the Eels. I think this is a game that the Eels need to win if they want to show how they're going to be this year, and they're pretty unchanged 1-17. So, next game was the Warriors getting over the Cowboys 24-20.
Another disgusting half. All I could do is shake my head. Just another disgusting first half by North Queensland.
Warriors were so hot.
The Warriors were slick, very slick.
Yeah, they were super slick in the first half. The Cowboys just had no answer. At all, literally.
And once again, it's just guys that aren't just no trust in the defensive line.
Bunching.
Bunching up. But then you got guys like Julian O'Neill, Justin O'Neill, Julian O'Neill. Good grief. Justin O'Neill just shooting out of the line of defense and leaving everybody in the lurch, creating this massive hole for the young kid Rocco Berry to go through in the 13th minute. It's like, what? No. Like, Todd Payton, if he had hair, he would just be tearing it out everywhere. It's the same problem.
He can't help himself.
He can't help it.
At all.
He's supposed to be the experienced one in this back line. Do you know what I mean? It's a whole bunch of youngsters, him and Kyle Feld, are your experienced guys. And he's doing stupid crap like that.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. He's doing stupid crap like that. I mean, that's this game. They just were red hot, the Warriors. They were extremely red hot.
Nikarima was having an absolute field day with how fast he is and the speed around the
and
ruck.
The line breaks. Yeah.
Just he was having an absolute field day. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, he was. I mean, he only got one try, but he kept busting the line a lot. I mean, two times in proper line breaks, but he was there or thereabouts all
quick,
the time.
But do you know what I mean? A fast play the ball and speed from the ruck, and the North Queensland just couldn't recover. And the Cowboys only had 43% of possession in that first half as well. And
they swung that around a little bit
by the scoreline.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. They swung it around. They had a better second half.
Why does it take them to have such an extremely poor first half, 2 weeks in a row now, and for them to have a near perfect second half, but they just left themselves too much to do?
Too much to do. Yeah, yeah. It was literally too much to do. Because they still had 15 minutes to at least get another try, but it was just, it ended up being just too much to sort of climb back, I guess.
No, and the goal kicking as well. Like, Val's been fairly reliable. Yeah, he missed a couple in this game, which could have been the difference. They only lose by four, and goal kicking as much as not so much as simple. It's a fundamental of the game, but it's so important. Especially if you're a struggling side, goal kicking. If you're going to be in games and you're not going to go out there and blow sides off the park, then you have to turn fours into sixes. It's just as simple as that.
Next game, well, the last game really was the Tigers beating the Dragons 16-8.
Benny Hunt came back in this game as well, and I think that would have made. Dragons fans extremely optimistic.
Would have, but they just I don't know. I couldn't explain why the Dragons lost that game. Like, what they did wrong was everything they did wrong. They couldn't complete sets. They missed a lot of tackles. I don't know what kind of team actually showed up, to be completely honest.
Just a spluttering offense. Like, it was like week one all over again. Like, a little bit of
and missed tackles. That's what I mean. Like, it was
disjointed.
45 missed tackles against 16. Yeah. Like, that, you can't do that in NRL. It was, I don't know what won the 17, who showed up, because it didn't feel like anybody personally sort of showed up.
Look, they were average in the first half to go in 8-6 up, and that, but they were just a totally, to me, it just looked like a totally different team once they ran out of the sheds for the second half. Like, it just, and just, I guess, a funny thing too, like, I don't know how much of the game you caught, if you caught it all or not. The Talau try in the first half, like the Tigers first, blatant forward pass to Dane Laurie as he hit the line. Looked like it was a meter forward. It was only 2 meters away from the dummy half passing it, but it was a meter forward. And how the hell the referee, two touchies and a referee don't see that, and it leads to a try. And you're just like, how does that even happen? Like, just because the catch in such close proximity to the pass, it's just like, holy moly, he's a meter forward. He's got two strides. He's caught the ball nearly two strides in front of where the ball was passed. It was unreal.
No, I must have missed that one. Yeah, the forward passes, they don't seem to. Yeah, it's
and
just
whether and whether or not the TV makes it more blatant than what it was at the ground as well. Do you know what I mean? Like, sometimes camera angles and things like that make make it look worse than what it is. But this, look, the optics of this, they weren't very good.
No. Yeah, that's true. This is sort of squeezing into my start of the week, but God damn, Dane Laurie had a great game in this. He was everywhere. He was breaking the line. He had two try assists. He was playing fullback and doing very well. But then, you know, just in that he ended up playing a little bit of like Adam Dewey, to be completely honest, in a six.
That's one of the best. That's the one of the best, if not the best game that I've seen him play. And he's got a lot of potential. And
he's only 21. You know,
yeah, and we said it at the start of the year, you know, why are they moving Dewey away from, you know, from that fullback position? But you know, he looks like he's sort of stepping into that role like Dewey did last year. It took him a little while to sort of get his feet underneath him, to make that fullback spot his own. And now, you know, and Laurie is starting to do that, you know, this year.
And Dewey isn't too bad at the number six. At least so in this game, he was pretty good because he's definitely a ball. Well, it's just like the fullback in him. He's a ball running 5'8".
Oh, yeah, that's right. Like, you know, he's got a, I guess, you know, like, I think a fairly average kicking game.
Yeah, no, and that's where you would hope, who didn't play too bad, Luke Brooks would have a sort of decent. Well, you know, your number seven at least had a decent kicking game, which he did. He was pretty good. You know, he forced three dropouts every time. So Luke Brooks was pretty good in this game.
Yeah, that's right. And that's the recipe for success. He has to be good. Otherwise, this team goes nowhere. They've got you know, a couple of good 1-2 punch up front. You know, with Jimmy Tamo and, you know, Joe Ofengawi and guys like that. Like they've got Luke Garner who's playing lights out. They've got a fairly decent forward pack. Not so much an unbelievable sort of bench depth, but, you know, their starting guys, the Tigers, are pretty good. You know, even Alex Twal, he's stepped into the prop role. He's played a lot more sort of, you know, that second row slash lock role, but he's been pushed into the front row and doing well.
And they don't, and young, I mean, except for Tamau, it's a pretty young side, really.
Yeah, so right.
They've got building blocks. They have building blocks. For all the crap we give them, they do have building blocks, at least. I was giving it to Dane Laurie, so I stood on my start of the week. Did you have your start of the week there?
Yeah, look, I'm not even going anyone from this country in this league. I'm going all halfway around the world to the Super League. And one Greg Inglis made a triumphant return to rugby league, playing for the Warrington Wolves. They absolutely destroyed Hull Kingston Rovers. That was like 50-26 or something like that. But yeah, he scored a try on club debut. He sat out the first what 6 weeks or 5 weeks of the season just to try and get himself into condition. He wasn't very happy with his game. Just reading an article about it.
Yeah, he
wasn't very happy with his effort, but. You know that the Wolves fullback Matty Ashton was hurt, so he had no choice. He had to go back and play fullback and filled in pretty good.
Well, he's still, like he said, he's still trying to find his rhythm, and I think he's probably still a little bit, probably needs to lose a little bit more weight. But that's just a personal thing.
He hasn't played football in over two years.
Yeah, that's exactly right. No, that's right. Yeah. Oh, it means again, you know. But you know how to score a try. You know how to score a try. I mean, look at Ben Barber when he plays. Like, well, when he kept moving places, he knows how to find the line. So
exactly. And if he's going to stick, which hopefully he does, he sticks it out in England for the rest of the year. By the time that finals comes around, he'll be a lean, mean footy machine by then.
Oh, of course he will. Of course he will. Did you have a dud of the week there?
Look, I thought the story that come out this week about Samoan Rugby League, the background of the story is that Joey Johns and Matty Johns and Sonny Bill Williams have basically stuck their hand up to say, hey, we want to coach this Samoan team in the upcoming World Cup. And basically, this Samoan Rugby League has come back and said, you know, thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah.
So, which, not to say that's a mistake by them, but there's a little bit of a rift between some of the players that are possible representatives for Samoa and the coach Matt Parrish. Yeah, some of the guys that are potential representative players that could play for Samoa have said that they're not very happy that they don't really want to play underneath Matt Parrish there. So I just thought for Samoan Rugby League to come out and just totally and utterly squash I guess a couple of greats of the game to go out there, but they basically said they'll do it for free. Like, they don't even want
payment. Yeah, they didn't want it for free.
And for them to, for this the sort of circle, this article to circulate for about, a week and a bit, and for them to just come out and flatly say, thanks, but no thanks, I think that could be a mistake.
Yeah, I think so. I'll tag on the back of that.
Why not even entertain the idea? Do you know what I mean? Like, thing. It just...
I don't know what they... Yeah, why? I mean, there was no real reason. They just said thanks, but no thanks.
No. They've thrown all their support behind Matt Parrish, who has been an assistant coach. He's been around for a while. He's been an assistant coach for a few teams. He's coached in the Q Cup before. He's been down in Newcastle for a little while as well. So I'm pretty sure he's been up here before as well. Either an assistant coach and reserve grade Q Cup coach as well. So it's not as if he's got the worst credentials in the world, but if there's talk coming out of there that Samoan representative players are not very impressed with what's going on there, then I think you've got to entertain the idea that these guys want to come in and put their efforts into Samoan Rugby League. This is how we grow the game internationally.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Yeah, it just didn't. Yeah, I mean, I thought when I read it, I thought it'd come out. I went, okay, like, that's. And then obviously they said for free because they don't need the money. All three of them.
They want to give back to the game, and this is the way to do it.
I think it was Matty came out. Matty basically came out and said he's just perplexed, because he named Jerome Luai and a few other players. Where he's perplexed why Samoa aren't where Tonga are because of, they've got these other players, but they just don't have the platforms in place, Samoa, to get to where Tonga are, to like challenge Australia and beat Australia.
That's right. So, like Samoa did a couple of years ago.
That's what he brought back.
That's what they want to have parity. They think the whether it's the ARL or Rugby League Commission or however the International Rugby League, they think that parity is let's have this tier system. Do you know what I mean? Where there's only three tier one nations in this tier two nation garbage. It did that whole system just needs to be scrapped.
Yeah,
it's the only way that you have to put these guys in marquee games. So they go, I want to play for Queensland or New South Wales and get a nice little $30,000 paycheck. But when I go, if I go back and play for my tier two nation, where's the passion coming at? You know what I mean?
This is why they want some of them want to play, for your state of origin. This is the reason. It's money incentive, obviously. That's right. Like anything,
they want the exposure and a $30,000 paycheck isn't bad either.
No, well, that's right. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Well, I've heard that some international teams, whether it be Papua New Guinea or Fiji, and that they get like $1,500, $2,000. That's it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it shouldn't be, and that's maybe that's the little bit of naivety in myself, but it shouldn't be about the money.
Well, no, it shouldn't
they
be about the money.
They have this passion for their culture and their people and their country. They should be lining up.
No, yeah, it should be a little bit of both, but then I think there's no reason why they should have more money put into them. I'm not saying don't take it of origin. I'm just saying, where these countries just blindly that's their number one sport, and then that's it. Give them the credentials and everything. Like, give them more because they will develop more. I mean, look at the players that are coming out from both Samoa and Tonga and pinch Papua New Guinea. So, couple of news before we finish.
The Samoan team is absolutely with guys that are tier one representative, and then this tier two system that they want to do it here. You know, they've got Fasua Malaali, represented Queensland. Jaden Sewell represented Queensland. Yeah, Josh Papali'i represented Queensland. Payne Huss represented New South Wales. Jerome Luai was in the New South Wales system. Yeah, Brian To'o, David Nofaluma. Like all the Junior Paulo has been in the New South Wales system. Do you know what I mean? Like it's just it's getting me worked up about it because all they want to do is just reap in the cash. But they want to go back there and they want to have, you know, the tradition and the culture and do you know what I mean? And the passion for playing for their country. But it's like, oh, no, screw that. If we can still play for New South Wales or Queensland. Oh, no, we'll totally do that too.
Yeah.
No, Wales and Queensland is the pathway to representing Australia.
Yeah. And they've got, the players that you just named. That's a good side already, really, if you look at it.
Exactly. It's a crazy good side.
And did you mention Jermaine Asako as well?
They had two of us to check their name for a fullback.
So yeah, Jermaine Asako, David Nofaluma, Chanel Havas-Tavita's from there. So they've got a pretty good
singer, Asako, and that's the thing too. Asako at the moment is basically he's a New Zealand representative.
Well, he's a low shop. Well, but I'm saying I think he's true. I believe he's true Samoan. But anyway, I know. Yeah, I agree. I totally agree with you.
Well, listen to me. They need more. They need more of those star players to not so much turn their back, but if they really want to bring those so-called lower nation tier two nations up, like Jason Tamalolo. Yeah, you know, like Andrew Fifita did with Tonga, that's what needs to happen.
Yeah,
they need you can't just flip and flop. Oh yeah, no, I'll represent New Zealand. Oh, I'm not good enough this year to represent New Zealand. Oh, I'll just go and represent me tier two nation. Like you can't flip and flop like that.
Yeah, no, you can't. No, you're right. No, I agree. But that frankly, it's just there's no just incentive. Annoying. That's the problem. There's just no incentive, and that's why. That's the only reason why. There's no incentive. Annoying. Moving on just to finish on some player movement and some retaining, so to speak. And we'll start with your team. Scotty Drinkwater re-signing with the North Queensland Cowboys for 2 years. Yeah.
Sigh of relief.
He had a huge approach from the Broncos at the last minute I read too. Broncos. So.
And I read that today, and it's just like terrific. So it's basically going to be a player swap, Dearden for Drinkwater, and then only 3 or 4 hours later, the article comes out to say that Drinkwater has signed on for the Cowboys for another 2 years, which is such terrific news. You know, just coming from a one-eyed supporter from up here, I think that is great because that was my biggest fear was they sent the wrong message to Drinkwater. In signing Tom Dearden after they'd already signed Chad Townsend. But all he's got to do is just keep showing his class like he is this year and good things are going to happen for him.
The thing is now, I don't know. I mean, we can talk about this later, but clearly Chad Townsend to me is your starting seven. Clearly.
Of course.
I just don't know what happens to Tom Dearden. It's not like a small amount of money you signed him to. So where do you play the three? This is my concern.
Oh, no, absolutely. That's right. It's going to be, I guess it will be a genuine competition throughout the off-season to see who's got the goods and who wants to take, I guess, no jersey is guaranteed.
No, I agree. And you can't not put Valentine Holmes at fullback, so he can't go there, one of them. Like, Drinkwater would be the natural one. I don't want him to, but because he's playing great at six.
You don't, but it's one of those good problems, I guess, to have is to have depth at those key positions. And if you have a little bit of injury problems, then you can sort of reshuffle around a little bit.
The problem, I get that, and I hear, I don't mind when I hear it's a good problem. The problem I have with that is that it's you put the money into the, you know, like again, like 3 years, $1 million for a, well, it's unknown, but he's still 19 years old, Tom Dearden. you can't put that amount of money and just say, it's a good problem to have. It's good to have death. But, you know, that's 300 plus on the books that you need to have in the game because that's what you're paying him for. So that's what I mean. I get what you're saying. I totally get what you're saying. I just don't. Moving forward, I don't, and you know, then it's clearly not going to go on the nine because that Reece Robson's a great player for you guys as well.
That's right.
It's a welcome problem, but it's just they need to work out, or they're not going to tell you, you're not going to know this year, but they need to work out what they're going to do because it's not like he can play, he's not going to do what he's doing at the Brisbane, like playing the lower grades for $1 million. So I just,
well, he's going that's a 300,000. Plus a year player that they could be running around for, you know, like you said, you know, for your boys down there, for the Mackay Cutters, like, you know, that seems
he'd draw a crowd. I tell you, he's a local boy,
draw a crowd. That's right. So
anyway, I just, yeah, it's a welcome problem. My concern with it is it's just it. You need, well, and they will. They'll work it out in the off season. They need to work it out. Well, all I know is Chad Townsend.
You don't want complacency either. But it can do strange things to players. Whether it's complacency or whether it's, the take a look over your shoulder syndrome. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, if you're always looking over your shoulder and go, well, geez, you know, if my form drops off, that could make people fall out of form. They put too much pressure on themselves to say, oh, you know, I've got this young guy, you know, sort of clapping at my heels. And that can take your focus off you know, game plans and playing football, just going out there and just playing football.
Another retention was, before we move on to someone that's actually moved from this side, was Xavier Coates. Big contract by the sounds of it. He's re-signed with the Broncos until 2025. Tony Stagg. My bad.
Yeah.
I was looking at Coates. Xavier Coates is going to Melbourne, which I'm more happy with, but we'll talk about that in a second.
Great signing for Brisbane. They had to, man, they're just losing people left, right and center at the moment. So I think, you know, for them to be able to snag him, I guess. And like we said a couple of weeks ago, the Gold Coast had essentially taken their offer off the table. So it could only assume it would have been Sydney clubs that would have been, trying to take him away from Brisbane.
Well, Parramatta was the last one.
Parramatta was one of the names that had been sort of flying around this story. But a good job there by Brisbane to sort of keep him at the Broncos.
Yeah, it was $3 million over 4 years, which is a, you know, fair bit of change for them. But they needed to. They're now at the moment a team where they just can't rely. Some of these players will, don't get me wrong, love just playing for the Broncos. But I'm telling you now, to me, 90% of them don't have to worry about playing for. They don't care if they play for the Broncos. They're gonna have to pay overs. So that's the way it is.
And that's a problem that every team in the history of a salary cap sport. If especially if you're a struggling team, that's just what you got to do. Have a look at the Bulldogs. Have a look at the Cowboys.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think it's the best thing that it's happening to Brisbane because they've always had that nonchalant, everyone will just come here because they want to play for Brisbane Broncos.
That's right. Their recruitment team has actually got to go out there and work for a change.
Stags always wanted to play for the Broncos, but I guarantee if someone threw a $3 million 4 year contract at it, he would 100% look at it as well. So
yeah, that's right.
But yeah, so I mentioned before, Xavier Coates, 2 year deal in Melbourne, which is a great direct.
Is that a foregone conclusion? That's absolutely rubber stamp. That's done. That's being done, or it's as good as done.
I am under the understanding it's as good as done. It's like, to me, it's about 95% done. He was non-committal in reports, but everything is linking to it, which is fine because we've got the Addo Carr money we're freeing up. So that's just a direct swap.
Exactly. It's a nice replacement.
That's a very nice replacement. I mean, we could have just easily said Melbourne will find someone, but that's a good one. That's a good one to find. Yeah, but that's a better one. That's not one that's just a team that just let them go. That this is a guy that, you know, is in form, played for Queensland last year, very young. Huh. So.
A bit, his form's been a bit erratic this year, but when Brisbane have done well, you know, in their wins. And, you know, obviously last week and their win against Canterbury a few weeks ago, he was good in them as well. And he was good against the Gold Coast this week.
Yeah. Yeah, he was. Yeah. Just to finish up, just want to talk about the Canberra Raiders. There's just a lot of things going on with the Canberra Raiders, except, I mean, not obviously the glaringly obvious that they're losing, and there's probably a lot of factors of it, but, I mean, first things first, right at the top, Josh Hodgson effectively is either losing, or if I read it correctly, he gave up his captaincy.
I think he's basically handed the big C back in to be the captain of the squad. So, like I said, that's one of many things at the moment. I think Ricky's just trying to find, I guess, the right formula to sort of get him back on track. And what he's done lately and dropped people and put people, demoted people and put them on the bench and, coming out and saying basically just because you're putting on a Canberra Raiders jersey, people are thinking that they're first grade players and, little slights like that. This one is a little worrying, I guess, but it comes down to he doesn't think that he can contribute enough as a captain, especially when he spends a lot of time on the sidelines.
Well, he's not guaranteed to be there next year. I've read him being linked to Brisbane. So
yeah, well, I've heard that too. At least this time we can't say, oh, he just wants to go back home, back to Queensland. This could be an actual legitimate thing.
And then just more going on in Canberra. I wouldn't say it's controversial, but it's all denied, but a slight rift apparently between Joey Tarponet and Ricky Stewart after he looks like he's going to speak to the playing group again, but there was a controversial Instagram post from Tarponet's wife basically questioning Stewart's coaching calls. The thing is, it's just more, but this is why these little things come out, rumors or not, they come out, but this ties back to why they're losing. There's clearly uneasiness in that dressing shed. It has to be.
Yeah, but for his wife to be coming out and saying like that, like Ricky Stewart must just be, really? Like this is where I'm getting the information from? Like not from my player, I'm getting it from his wife on Instagram? Like you've got an international on your bench and you're not, your interchanges are killing and stuff like that. If he's not playing good football, then you can't warrant him playing more minutes than other guys who aren't playing good football. Like this, I get it. She's got an extreme one eye for her husband, but you've got Ricky Stewart has got to take into account a whole team and not worry about the personal feelings too much of one player. And Tarpany was dropped a couple of weeks ago because he wasn't playing well. And some people can handle that. Yeah, some people will go back to reserve grade and go, right, I've got to roll the sleeves up and put my big boy pants on and just go out there and play football. And other ones will, especially if they're sort of, mollycoddled and you've got to wrap your arm around them and go, oh, it's okay, mate.
Well, Papa Lee did it.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you got to get over yourself.
Papa Lee didn't win when he got dropped. A shock to me, but, he got over it. He rolled his boots up. He rolled his socks up. Can't roll your boots up, my God. He didn't whinge about it.
You just gotta go, right, oh, cool. Obviously the coach is seeing that I'm not playing very well. You've got to be open and honest with yourself.
Yeah.
I think that's the first thing to go, oh, Matt, you might think that you're playing good football, but it'd be like, oh, well, maybe I'm not playing as good as what I think I am. So, you go back and you work on your craft. Like you said, you just roll your sleeves up, go back and play for reserve grade, play as best you can and wait for your opportunity to come back. And if some players can't handle that, well, that's their problem.
Well, the last thing then to come out of there is reportedly George Williams is homesick and keen to go back to England. I I can't blame him purely because obviously, you know, with clearly because of the whole COVID, he's not seeing his family at all. So
well, his wife's pregnant. Yeah. So I think that's got a bit to do with it. But I think it's, you know, obviously with COVID restrictions and stuff like that, I think it's just the fact that he can't go. He doesn't have the opportunity. Yeah,
he can't go. That's what I mean. Right.
He can't go. So it's not as if he can just and pack up and go, right, I'm out of here.
And vice versa. They can't come here as well. So it's, and that's what it is. They're trying to, the club knows and the club understands this is going off Danny Wilder, that it's completely, it's obviously difficult. Not seeing his family, and they're trying to put support around him. So I don't know how they're going to do that unless they're going to somehow try to get someone over here. There's probably are ways too, not to be special exemptions, but they have basically told his agent, they asked him to stay put, but we'll just have to take.
They've basically come out and said, we are extremely sympathetic to your situation, and we will do our best to try and, you know, accommodate you as best we can. But yeah, it's basically, you're not going anywhere. Sorry, George.
Well, yeah, but sometimes, you know, yeah.
Well, that's what I mean. It's a situation. No, that's really right. It'll be a testament to the character.
There was no pun intended.
No pun intended on sticky situations.
Nah, there was no pun. I didn't even think of that until I read Ricky Stewart. I went, oh, there's another headache for it.
I just might have been talking about the South Park episode where everything was, we eat ice cream, and that's what I call a sticky situation.
That's how I'm going to finish it now. Well, that'll do it for this week. Don't forget, you've got our socials out there. Twitter's at Final Play Pod. Sorry, I'm trying to hurry. Someone's going to play basketball in about a half an hour. So, and the other ones, obviously, we all got to play basketball. We've got to keep fit, everyone out there. Other ones, Facebook, which is Final Play Podcast, where you'll see all our links to all our, where you can get all our pods, and I mean every single pod, which is obviously on Spotify. And as always, don't forget, you can, if you're into trading cards, gimco.com.au is where you'll also get our podcast, all 135 or 6, I think. I think
more than that now, but yeah, no, you can get you can definitely get those off Gimco. And thanks to Dom, I was in one of the last NFL breaks. So yeah, thanks again for doing that for us. I have to get into one of the NBA breaks one of these days. But
you didn't go in that last one, did you? If you, I remember you saying.
Nah, I didn't get in the last one, but I think it was the one before that, was a couple of weeks ago. So, but yeah, always appreciative to Dom and Mojo King for letting us on their platform. So that's always appreciated.
Well, there's an NBA one sitting there. I'll tell you in a second. Hey, that'll do.
I'm sure there is. I'll just wait around for NBA Friday.
My name's Jason Sticky Situation Smith, because that was way too obvious.
Oh, Miles, let's all have ice cream plum.
Ice cream. Have a good week, everyone.
See ya.